From Saxonburg to Milroy, Middletown to Punxsutawney, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Trump administration is going to take another look at the Nippon-U.S. steel deal that was nixed by former President Joe Biden. David Taylor is joined by Rebecca Euler and Stephen Bloom for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And mass transit authorities in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh are demanding more money from Harrisburg. That's because state transportation policy is a tangled mess. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Center Square reports that a new study by the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, finds Pennsylvania ranks 32nd in energy affordability. This despite the fact Penn's Woods is one of the nation's leading producers of energy. The report says existing policies, quote, meant to wean the state off fossil fuels have made affordability worse. Speculation about the 2026 race for governor of Pennsylvania is beginning to heat up as potential Republican candidates delivered speeches last weekend to the annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, which is the biggest gathering of grassroots conservatives every year. Pennsylvania State Treasurer Stacey Garrity has been teasing a run and was the winner of the conference straw poll. Also speaking at the event was Congressman Dan Muser, who has been making appearances around the state as he tests the waters for a potential run. Governor Josh Shapiro will be seeking a second term. He is the certain Democratic nominee. Shapiro won convincingly 4 years ago, but the Democrat voter registration edge in Pennsylvania has been cut to under 50,000 registered voters, and the GOP swept all statewide offices last year, suggesting the 2026 gubernatorial race will be highly competitive. And there is more evidence that progressive Pittsburgh Mayor Ed Gainey's campaign for re-election is in trouble. Challenger Corey O'Connor continues to out-fundraise the incumbent, raising over $250,000 last month alone. Gainey's campaign raised just about $143,000 in March. Progressives within the Democratic Party have been on a winning streak, electing Gainey as mayor and also snaring the Allegheny County Executive's office and a congressional seat. But mounting problems in city government have given the traditional wing of the party new energy. The city of Pittsburgh is heavily Democratic, so the winner of the primary is likely to sit in the mayor's office for the next 4 years. A new report from the Network Contagion Research Institute finds that, quote, tolerance and even advocacy for political violence appears to have surged, especially among politically left-leaning segments of the population. Even more disturbingly, the report finds a, quote, broader assassination culture appears to be emerging in certain segments of the population. Recent left-wing violence against Tesla dealerships and owners would seem to be the latest example of concerns outlined in the report. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Nippon Steel has been attempting to acquire U.S. Steel. The Japanese steelmaker is planning to invest billions to upgrade American factories. The deal was scuttled by the Biden administration, but now the Trump administration is going to take a second look. Here with a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion are David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation, and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, great to be with you.
Great to be with you, David.
And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks for being on the show.
It's a pleasure to be with you today, David.
Well, we're going to have fun because we've actually, believe it or not, got good news to share. Something really amazing has come to pass that the Homer City Power Generation Station, the coal-fired power plant that was killed off by the Wolf-Shapiro-Reggie regional greenhouse gas deal, is going to have new life, that the Homer City location is going to be the home of a $10 billion natural gas-fired power plant and data center. It is going to be the largest capital investment in the history of Pennsylvania, and it will be the largest natural gas power plant in America. This is private sector investment. It is just absolutely revolutionary.
Yeah, it's really exciting. 10,000 direct on-site construction-related jobs, which is huge for, of course, the trades in that area, and over 1,000 permanent high-paying operations jobs in technology sciences.
That's fantastic.
So really amazing. And as we know, when you have an employer in an area that big, the ripple effects throughout the entire economy are amazing, because then you have small businesses growing up around a facility like that that supply those industries, employees, and support the industry in the surrounding community. So it will really impact the entire community.
With those AI data center jobs, you'll be bringing in a whole new cadre of of professional people. So along with the the building trades jobs, all the construction jobs, the industrial unions to work and operate the power plant, that with the data center, then you have another dimension of bringing in value added, and certainly, artificial intelligence is going to be, one of the future battlefields of international power between the U.S. and other nations, especially communist China. And so, we need as many of these, private sector investments to do this research to get us where America needs to be as a global leader in this artificial intelligence, data processing, quantum computing stuff. And it's going to happen right here in Pennsylvania.
Well, I mean, as the second largest natural gas producer in the nation, we are really poised to take advantage of that technological development, like you said. And we talk a lot here about Pennsylvania's energy resources and how important they are to economic development and the success of our state. And this is just absolutely proof of that.
Part of this is about trusting the market, which is to say that rather than having a government-directed, taxpayer-funded agenda of economic development, that what we really need is strong economic fundamentals and maximizing the inherent strengths that we have as a commonwealth with our own native resources. And again, that this superabundance of clean burning natural gas is one of the native resources here in the Commonwealth, and it can do amazing things. We just need to bring it to the surface where it can be of benefit to human beings. But having that consumer demand, to make productive use of those resources, that's been the missing piece, and that's why we need to to fix these competitiveness problems so that potential investors look on us favorably, so that we can earn more of these kinds of investments, which again are going to do amazing things for the Pennsylvania communities where they're located.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. What government really needs to do is get out of the way of the market. And our comparative advantage here in Pennsylvania is absolutely one of them. One of our biggest ones is our energy, our natural gas. And it's like you said, if we need to be successful by taking advantage of that comparative opportunity that we have to succeed in the 21st century with AI, we're poised to do it. Government needs to facilitate that and get out of the way.
Yeah. Well, I will clarify, if mm-hmm. I may, that it's not just getting out of the way exactly. It's like, don't hassle people
right.
unnecessarily.
You're right.
There are baseline things that government needs to do them well, efficiently, affordably, on time, building out roads and,
right.
Helping to, get the power transmission lines and such. We need those things. We need the permitting review to happen in a prompt and correct, way. I think the thing where government really needs to get out of the way is just to show humility in the sense like government doesn't know better than the rest of us, mm-hmm. especially the collective wisdom of the marketplace.
Right.
And that if the focus of government is to just improve the competitive environment, to hammer down as much as possible those baseline costs of creating and keeping jobs, one of which, of course, is the availability and reliability and affordability of energy, whether that's, electricity or petroleum or natural gas or whatever source it is that one needs, making sure that we have enough because we've fostered a positive environment for entities to choose to develop and produce those energy resources, to make sure that the grid is stable and modernized and not overtaxed. Those are the kinds of things that government should be focused on rather than, trying to manipulate the marketplace, to pick winners and losers, mm-hmm. and to otherwise impose their own arbitrary choices on how the market functions.
And you can think about this project. It not only provides or is going to provide a service that's necessary to our society to function well, it's also cleaner than the previous sources that were available for generating electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Natural gas fired plant, and I'm just looking at an article I saw in my reading earlier today. It's from the Delaware Valley Journal, and it's called "Study: As Use of Natural Gas Rose, Carbon Emissions Fell." And this is a April 8th article, and I'll just read a quick excerpt.
Please,
a quick excerpt from it. A new study from Miami University of Ohio reinforces what natural gas advocates have been saying for years: more natural gas energy production has led to lower U.S. carbon emissions. The peer-reviewed study found overall greenhouse gas emissions dropped roughly 7.5% per year as American energy companies shifted from coal to hydraulic fracking for natural gas. The drop was even more significant for CO2 emissions, with a yearly reduction of 10.5%.
And along with that, there were also really amazing reductions in sulfur oxides and nitrogen oxides down to I think below 95% for each of those. So like near total elimination of those other elements
in
the air.
And again, this is something we've talked about for years. It's bearing fruit.
Correct.
Our air and water is going to be cleaner in Pennsylvania because the market has actually determined how to use this properly and do it in a safe way with Pennsylvania natural gas in order to be the clean fuel for the whole program.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. And there was another point I wanted to bring in there related that it was the ambassador to the United States of the European Union, that she was in Harrisburg, and I was one of the people in the group that she spoke with, and that she said that her top priority was getting more liquefied natural gas from America for consumers in Europe because, she said, they recognize that the Americans harvest the energy and liquefy the natural gas with fewer emissions than anywhere else in the world. We have the cleanest process with the least negative effect on the environment, which is why they prefer us as their energy source. So again, this is something that recommends to us to deploy these resources to benefit human flourishing. And in this instance, for the U.S., for Pennsylvania to participate in the U.S. export of liquefied natural gas for our allies in Europe to help them to run their economies and to uphold the economies of their country, but also to help them disentangle their energy relationships from Russia. And so this is clearly in our national interest. It serves the interests of our allies. And again, to defund the Kremlin would be, you know, that's a great priority. These are the sorts of things that are possible if our leaders take a pro-production approach to these resources.
And we're just scratching at the surface at this point, even though the numbers are phenomenal and really fantastic to contemplate, like beyond all understanding in terms of the actual type of investment we're talking about here
yeah.
in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be nice if we were also able to deploy similar private equity through the marketplace in trading and moving natural gas resources through New York State, which currently caps us and prevents us from being able to deliver to New England, which is desperately in need of clean, inexpensive fuel in these times of high cost and high energy demands.
Yep, exactly. And in Europe, in New England, that the primary fuel source is home heating oil, which is more expensive and also has greater carbon emissions. If they had access to clean burning Pennsylvania natural gas, that they would not only save money, it would be better for the environment.
And they have a ban on fracking in New York, so they're not producing their own natural gas there. And they have disallowed pipeline development in New York that would carry Pennsylvania natural gas into the state of New York. So those are the reasons why they have not been able to develop or to use domestically produced natural gas there. So hopefully studies like this one that Steve just cited will start to change some minds a bit in our neighbors to the north.
Well, you know, here's hoping, but I think that they're really going to get an attitude adjustment because that the president has taken a personal interest in that pipeline that was supposed to go from northeastern PA to central New York. It was a project of the Williams Company. It was known as the Constitution Pipeline, and that apparently President Trump has taken a personal interest in seeing to it that that project finally does come to pass. So, yeah, things are moving at a really surprising kind of speed, but boy, this is really good news and this is welcome. And there's something else that the that President Trump has done that gives me hope, that the review process that the Biden administration used to sink the proposed merger of U.S. Steel and Nippon Steel from Japan, that President Trump has ordered that merger to go back to the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. Of course, the difference now is that instead of having the folks sitting around that table all be appointees from President Biden, those will be President Trump's people. And so we are very hopeful that that deal might get approved. In fact, the private investment group that was basically a stalking horse for Cleveland Cliffs, U.S. Steel's rival to buy the company, that they've raised the white flag. They've said, with President Trump sending this back to CFIUS, we believe the deal is going to be approved, and therefore we this investment group are no longer pursuing a purchase of U.S. Steel. So, you know, as a very wise man once said, it ain't over till it's over. But I like our chances. It seems as though everything is moving in the right direction. And if this comes to pass, it means that U.S. Steel will continue to operate under its historic name. Its headquarters will remain in Pittsburgh, that nobody will lose their job because of the transaction, that all existing labor agreements will be honored, and that billions of dollars will be rolling in to invest in the production capacity in the Monongahela Valley. So the Clairton Coke Works, the Edgar Thompson Steel Mill, and especially the hot strip mill in West Mifflin, that those things will all be upgraded and that the hot strip mill will actually be replaced completely, that will be a $1 billion investment to take that particular part of the process and tear it down and build it back new. And and when that happens, it means that steelmaking will continue in the Mon Valley, in Allegheny County, for generations to come.
And it also means that the infrastructure for construction and operation of such complex plants and facilities there's a synergy created by the fact that there's enough heavy industry there that you can have all the necessary First of all, labor force,
right.
Skilled labor,
mm-hmm.
and you had already mentioned that earlier in the show, and then, but in addition to that, all the other parts of the infrastructure necessary for those kinds of conditions. So, having more come into Western Pennsylvania actually bodes well for attracting even more because the infrastructure's there to run these type of heavy industries.
And synergy, I think that's exactly right, and that. That success begets success, and that you've got the jobs on the plant floor. I mean, we've got all the construction jobs to do the upgrades, to rebuild facilities, and then when we're through that process, there'll still be the jobs on the plant floor, all of the supply jobs, the logistics and industrial services, and
lots of trucks,
and then lots of trucks.
Yep.
And Rebecca, as you were saying, then also the induced jobs, the jobs that come into existence because of those economic activities that come alongside, just because people are there and working.
Right. And I think President Trump has also mentioned wanting to bring shipbuilding back to the U.S. and specifically Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
How cool would it be if we actually made ships in Pennsylvania made of Pennsylvania steel?
Yeah, it's
just
fantastic. It really is. And so, again, to our faithful listeners, thank you for listening to us grouse and complain and bellyache. We're very glad that we have something genuinely positive to report. Unfortunately, we're coming down here to the last moments of the show. But before we go, we'll go around the horn. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you're doing?
They can visit CommonwealthFoundation.org.
Wonderful. And Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at PMTA.org.
Wonderful. And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. And from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks to all of you for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. In the grand tradition of the film Groundhog Day, just like the public education establishment and welfare advocates, public transportation agencies pop out of their holes every spring, demanding hefty increases in state subsidies while threatening dire consequences if legislators fail to do so. Generally speaking, transportation policy in Pennsylvania is a dumpster fire. Funding for the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation is a patchwork quilt of money pots. Toll dollars have been looted from the Pennsylvania Turnpike to fund roads, bridges, and mass transportation. And public transit systems themselves are rife with labor union excess and inefficiency. Budget season is well underway in Harrisburg, and the state's two largest public transportation systems, the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Authority, or SEPTA, in Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh Regional Transit, or PRT, in Allegheny County, are both applying the pressure for more funding. It is a favorite, and by the way, highly effective tactic of bureaucratic agencies to make or threaten cuts that will inflict the highest level of pain possible on those they supposedly serve. Often called the Washington Monument Strategy, the tactic is so named because anytime Congress fails to pass a budget or continuing resolution on time, the first places closed are the national parks. They are highly visible assets, thereby creating the highest level of pressure on lawmakers. So it has come to pass that both SEPTA and PRT are once again demanding a massive increase in state funding while threatening to cut service if their demands are not met. The PRT board claims to have a $100 million budget deficit in fiscal year 2025-26 and is threatening service reductions and fare increases that would affect both fixed route and paratransit services. The Allegheny Institute in Pittsburgh has for years pointed out that PRT's bus expenses are among the highest in the nation and has released detailed policy briefs on the subject. Meanwhile, SEPTA didn't even make it through the current fiscal year without a budget crisis. Back in November, Governor Josh Shapiro raided a pot of federal funding that was supposed to pay for major road and bridge improvements in rural counties around the state, plexing $153 million to SEPTA. SEPTA, of course, is back at the trough, demanding millions more or, you guessed it, they will cut routes and increase fares. The transit agencies are presenting a false scenario to Harrisburg policymakers. They posit the only choices are to give them more state taxpayer dollars or steep cuts in routes coupled with fare increases. It is possible, even likely, that demographic changes have made some routes unnecessary. And it is fair to ask the users of the systems to shoulder more of the cost associated with the services from which they benefit. However, the agencies refuse to implement operating reforms that would reduce overhead costs. For example, the Allegheny Institute found the average hourly wage for a PRT driver was nearly twice that of the hourly wage for a driver working for any of the smaller transit authorities in the five-county southwestern Pennsylvania area. Labor unions have elected officials, hence transit management, in a chokehold, preventing the implementation of needed wage, benefit, and work rule reforms. Legislators in Harrisburg keep shoveling money out the door without ever demanding reform and accountability. Until they do, Pennsylvanians who never set foot on a SEPTA train or a PRT bus will continue subsidizing the services. The same scenario continues to play out with the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Fare hikes on the Pennsylvania Turnpike are as frequent as losing seasons for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Since 2007, when the legislature passed Act 44, hundreds of millions of toll dollars have been siphoned off from the Turnpike to PennDOT and to subsidize mass transit. Those dollars were to have been backfilled by revenue generated from tolling Interstate 80. However, the federal government refused to allow tolling of the interstate, so the projected revenue stream never materialized, but the requirement to flex dollars to PennDOT and mass transit agencies remained. The result has been a massive increase in Turnpike Commission debt, along with substantial annual fare increases. Although payments to PennDOT have decreased, the flexing of money continues, as does the need for the Turnpike Commission to pay off debt accumulated because of the scheme. All of this is to say Pennsylvania transportation policy is a tangled mess. Funding streams have been pieced together over the years due to whatever funding crisis had arisen, and there remains no plan for holding SEPTA, PRT, or PennDOT accountable. The only certainty is we, the taxpayers and turnpike travelers, will continue to shovel ever-increasing subsidies into a broken system. With the Town Hall Commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WCNS AM and FM in Latrobe, along with WIOO-FM and WHYL-FM in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
We'll be right back.